believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Livonia, earned a law degree from the University of Detroit, and soon thereafter went into public service. He's one of the most influential and powerful leaders in Southeast Michigan. He was the Wayne County Sheriff for 21 years, and since 2003 has been the Wayne County Executive. Wayne County today consists of 2.1 million people and is our nation's 11th largest county population-wise. His name, Robert Fecano. Bob Fecano, and I'm Jack Crisul, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with the Wayne County Executive, Bob Fecano. Bob, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about your parents and your childhood?
Well, sure. I'm a firstborn generation here. Both my parents are Italian, obviously by my last name. My dad and grandfather came here. My grandfather came here in the 1920s, early 1920s. And he originally came over to Canada, and then he heard that Henry Ford was going to have this great experiment, and he was going to pay you $5 a day to build cars in his factory. So he came on over and then started his life here in Michigan. And there's a number of great stories that go with him and my grandmother. My grandmother obviously came over later on. They were both from the same town. They sort of knew each other from a distance, but they didn't really know each other. The only story my grandmother kept telling me, and I thought it was great at first, my grandfather was an altar boy. And I said, boy, he must have been very pious and everything else. And she says, no, in the village, you got to be an altar boy if you're always being caught doing something wrong. And so your penalty had to be that you had to be the altar boy for the mass the following week. So I guess he was an altar boy a lot. But my dad came over. He was on the second Red Cross ship after World War II. His father was already here. He had come over before World War II, and then when the war broke out, they weren't giving visas to Italians at that time. And he came over, and he actually, though, did not, everybody goes to New York, or the perception is they go to New York. His ship actually landed in New Jersey. And so then he came on over, and my grandfather, his father, was already here, and in fact, was in the radio business. Hmm. And was a printer, and so he grew up here as well. My mom was born here, and it's been a great childhood. I mean, they were very caring. There were a lot of tender moments, and really the inspirations that I have came from them. People ask you who your role models are, and I know people will talk about sports or athletes and things like that. Mine really were my parents. They did a phenomenal job of making sure that to reach the goals and to reach as high as I wanted to reach.
What's the biggest thing you learned from your mom and the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
They complimented each other very well. Very, very well. Very humble. My dad was a maintenance worker for the Livonia Public Schools for a number of years. My mom was a secretary there. And the biggest thing for my mom was drive to reach out and to achieve and to overachieve. She was the one who was constantly pushing. In her mind, from the day I was born, there was no alternative except that I was going to go to college. That education was very important to them. And my dad was more the compassionate side. He was one that was always making sure that everybody was taken care of. He was always one that was concerned. But he also was a hard worker. He worked two jobs most of his life. And he's still alive. He's still with us. Both of them are. But he worked two jobs. He would work during his day job was a maintenance worker at the Livonia schools, and then he would always usually have a second job. Many times would get home at 7 or 8 or 9 at night, and all of that they helped and made sure that there was going to be something for me to do to have as a way of college education. So they were always putting money away for that.
When did you first know, Bob Fecano, that you wanted to be having a career in public service / politics?
Well, it really goes back a lot to my grandparents, and especially my grandfather. When my grandfather came here, and he was he eventually did work at the Ford Rouge complex. He was actually at the Battle of the Overpass. He was active in the UAW movement. And every Sunday, there would always be a lot of discussion. We had a traditional Italian dinner every Sunday where my grandparents, myself, and we'd always be there. And there was a lot of discussion of politics. There was a lot of politics. And to him, FDR walked on water. When he came here and the Depression and everything else that hit them, he had such an attachment to FDR because he felt that he was a person, the president, that really cared for the people and things like that. So he kept talking about that, instilling that in public service and how great it was and things like that. So he brought me to a lot of UAW rallies. Like my first camera was, I remember it was a plastic thing, but it was at a UAW Christmas party that he brought me to, and a lot of political rallies that the UAW had and things like that.
How did you first get into politics?
It was back at Michigan State University. I actually, my grandfather again was planted the initial seeds for that. Like it would be a break for me. Like I remember watching the Goldwater Johnson results. They weren't instantaneous like they are now. That as soon as 8 o'clock comes, they declare the winner. Then you had to actually wait, and they had to wait for the Western states to come in and things like that. So it was a big night that I would be able to go to my grandfather's, and we'd watch all the election rituals, especially in the presidential elections. And I in particular remember Johnson and Goldwater. And with that, I started getting a real interest in it, and it just picked up from there. But it really started at Michigan State the first time I ran for something. There was a friend of mine who was at University of Michigan. In fact, he works now with the county. His name is Alan Helmkamp. He drove up on a Friday night, and he said, you know, there's going to be an elections for precinct delegates. He says, I want to sign up, and let's go. He says, I want you to run. And both of us lived in Livonia at the time, so we had to go. I left East Lansing, and we drove down. I ran in my precinct in Livonia. He ran in his. And it was sort of history. I won my election. Al didn't win his at that point, but he got me engaged. And from there, we went to the county convention, state convention, and it sort of took off from there.
We're talking to Bob Fecano. When we come back, we'll ask him about his 21-year reign as Wayne County Sheriff. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Bob Fecano, who in 1983 became the Wayne County Sheriff and held that role for 21 years. First off, have you ever been stopped by a Wayne County Sheriff?
Jack, yes, I have to admit I have been. I was one day driving in Hines Park, and the county patrols that with the sheriff's department. And sure enough, there was a patrol car pulls behind me, and puts on his lights. And I'm thinking, okay, he must see the plates. And then, but at that point, pulls over. He comes out and he says hello and stuff. He's, oh yeah, well I thought it might have been you. And I'm looking at him. He says, well, you know what? I retire tomorrow. Today is my last day. So I guess he thought he wanted to have a little fun with it, and it was humorous at the time. But yes, so I have been stopped.
What was the role of Wayne County Sheriff, Bob?
We tried to expand the role. One of the things, you had some traditional things. I mean, you think of sheriff, it goes back even to the West where they run the jail and We traditionally did that. There's about 45,000 inmates that run through the Wayne County Jail system every year. And those are standard procedure things that fed in from all the courts and all the district courts in all 43 communities in Wayne County. But we tried to expand it and do some new things. We're very proud. We're probably one of the first law enforcement agencies that started an internet unit. And at first, when we went after that, we thought, well, you know, we'll start this up. And once it gets some publicity, there will be nobody that will continuously go on the internet and try to solicit young children or young girls or those type of situations, because once they see it, they won't know who it is. Well, we couldn't have been more wrong about that, but people continue to do it, and unfortunately, it's still very active. But we started with it, and now things that are very accepted as practice, because we spent, at that time, it was John O'Hare was the prosecutor. We spent about 2.5 months with him. We were trying to look at all the scenarios, because this was brand new area of law that we were looking at and how it was going to be challenged. And, you know, we were looking at the issues of entrapment and things like that. And finally, after about 2.5 months, we had it set up. The first couple were successful, and then it just cut on from that. And I believe, even to this day, the conviction rate is 100% with everybody that they arrest off of that unit. Because, first of all, it's all the printout, and it's everything's captured on the computer. So all the conversation and everything else. It caught on. We even did training for the FBI and some others. The unit became very advanced in what we were able to do. And now today, it's very common. Throughout all metropolitan areas and, you know, federal agencies, they have these type of units. But we were proud that we were probably one of the first in the nation to set it up and to go into those new areas. And, you know, there was traditional things such as narcotics. Narcotics obviously are still an issue. In fact, probably most of the homicides that you see in an urban area are one way or another related to narcotics, either whether it's a gang or some type of transactions that's connected to it. So there are still those issues that we dealt with. But it was a very, very rewarding job, one that I enjoyed very much. At the same time, moving on at the time was okay with me as well, because after 20 years, I felt that I had accomplished a lot and I wanted to move on.
How did you ever become Wayne County Executive in 2003?
Well, that one was an election. At that point, what was happening, Mr. McNamara was the county executive at the time. And he wasn't, there was rumblings whether he was going to run or not. There wasn't a lot of certainty as to what was going on. And so we formed a committee. We started to look at it. And then, unfortunately, Mr. McNamara, at that point, his illness became very public. And then he did announce that he was not going to run again. And so we went into the primary. We were very fortunate. We worked very hard. And we were able to win it pretty decisively. And we got reelected in our second term just a year and a half ago. So Wayne County is very Democratic. So usually the contest, if you're going to have one, is going to be in the primary. I don't think there's been a Republican that has been elected since 1946 countywide. In fact, they were sort of, I was with a Chinese delegation yesterday. And they were asking, they said, well, how Democratic is Wayne County? And I told them there hasn't been one Republican elected countywide since 1946. They said, well, it sounds like sometimes what happens in our country, that, you know, something just gets dominated for so many years. I said, well, ours are a little bit more open to elections here. But it's a job that I really enjoy. I mean, it has a lot of possibilities that any elected position, especially one that's in the executive branch, Jack, you wake up every day, and if you have something that you think you can try to do, not, you can't change the world overnight or anything like that, but if you have an idea that you think is very good and that you want to see implemented and actually move the region or the county, the city in a certain direction, you can actually, you're in a position to try to do that and to influence and to push it. There aren't a lot of jobs like that. Where you can, sometimes it takes forever and you run into roadblocks and everything else, but it's one of those positions that if you think that I can try to commit, you know, X number of resources to make this happen because I think it's good and I think it's going to help people or in the direction you want to go. It's very rewarding because you have that opportunity to do it. You're not always successful, but, you know, it depends how you define success. I was telling somebody the other day, he says, well, they said, "What, you know, how can you tell if you're successful?" Well, if you're a Major League Baseball player and you are successful 3 out of 10 times, you're going to be making millions of dollars because a 300 hitter does very well in the major leagues. And a little of this goes back to that philosophy I was talking about, my grandfather, you know, an FDR. FDR was trying everything. He was putting a number of programs out to sit there and try to change the economic climate, you know, during the Great Depression as to what was happening. A lot of those, some of those including the Supreme Court knockdown and things like that. But he did not get discouraged by keep trying things to try to shake it up and to get things moving. And in these, especially in executive positions, you can try to do that. And that's what I enjoy the most is that we have concepts, we have ideas, we try things. I know it gets used a lot, thinking out of the box, but we really like to look for innovative, different things. And a lot of things aren't reinvented. I mean, you'd be surprised by just looking at other states. Just Google it and certain concepts and things like that. You look at it and you say, well, why can't we try that over here? And see what you can try to commit to. And that doesn't mean you come up with a new idea every day. We have certain things that we're pushing towards, you know, with Aerotropolis, with COBA, and things like that. But you can look at and say, if I really want to make a difference in this area, you can try to put the resources behind it and to do it. But boy, the time flies by, the years fly by trying to do it. And it's like everything else in life. You'd like to slow it down and spend more time on certain things, but sometimes you just can't.
If ever there was a global community, it's Wayne County. Like, your resume, you could be a serious candidate for the next UN Secretary General. Talk about this global community of 2.1 million people.
You know, we are the most diverse county, Jack, not only in the state of Michigan, but probably throughout the Midwest. And believe it or not, we use that as a very strong selling point, especially for international investment. One of our favorite lines, and we talk to international companies, is that if you invest here, we look like the rest of the world. And it's not monolithic, and it's not just, you know, centrally located for one a particular culture or background. And that's a very big selling point. And it helps us now. Like, for example, when we look at certain things that we want to do, and how do we market ourselves? Well, we think about healthcare and things like that. I mean, which we're looking at trying to say, okay, how do we market our healthcare and our institutions here? We say, well, you know what? With our, like, for example, our Middle East population, there are a lot of wealthy individuals from the Middle East that fly over into the United States, and they go to the Cleveland Clinic. Most of the paradigm is we go to the Cleveland Clinic. That's because they've always gone to the Cleveland Clinic. Well, why not? Because of the cultural comforts that we have here and the familiarity, because like when they fly over from the Middle East, they usually always bring their families and it's a long extended stay and things like that for the health care they're getting. Why not sell what we have? We have great health institutions here. We have great hospitals and things like that and treatments. Why not also sell the aspect that your family is going to be very comfortable here because it's culturally closer than you'll find any place else in the United States. Those type of things, trying to turn them to advantages. And that's what the diversity does for us in Wayne County.
We're talking to the number one salesperson for Wayne County, Bob Facano. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Bob Facano. Someday, Bob, we're going to get Cobalholics panicked. Someday.
In our lifetime.
Anything is possible.
In our lifetime, yeah.
When it happens, and if a reporter comes to you and said, how did it finally happen? What will the answer be?
It's going to be the realization that this isn't a game that the reality of it is that we could seriously lose this auto show and lose the economic impact that it has. Now, when we talk about Cobo Hall, I mean, the emphasis is on the International Auto Show. There are other shows and conventions that come in as well. And just the simple numbers from David Sowerby, who I know is on WJR many times, is staggering. It's 16,000 direct jobs just to the auto show. And it's also about $500 million in economic activity every year. Now, Jack, to put that in perspective, the last Super Bowl was the most attended by the media because you had the Patriots that were undefeated, going for an undefeated season. You had this feel-good story of the Giants and things that were going with it. They had 3,000 press there. It's the most they ever had at a Super Bowl. The International Auto Show gets 6,000 every year. We went gaga over the Super Bowl when it was here in Detroit, and rightfully so. I mean, we're very proud, and it was a great civic thing. But that generates between $80 to $100 million in economic activity. We have the International Auto Show that generates $500 million. If there was a company that would come into this area, was looking at putting in superstores or putting in a facility, a factory or anything like that, and they said those numbers, we'll hire 16,000 people and we'll create $500 million, we would be doing backflips saying, what do we have to do to make sure that you locate in our area? And this is taken for granted. And for those that say, oh, no, we're not going to lose it, you know, it's just been the past 15 or 20 years that we've been an international auto show. Up to that point, we were basically a regional show. And so the impact of it will slowly diminish away from us. And for those that say, well, it's not going to go away, well, I believe it was 2 years ago, there were 78 new prototypes or models that were announced in Detroit for the auto show. Last year, there were 56. Now, there's all sorts of reasons why the auto companies choose different venues that they make certain announcements. I mean, they like to announce a lot of their green cars and things like that in Washington, D.C., and there's reasons why they do it. But at the same time, there is an erosion. And Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, they all recognize it. And they're wanting those new announcements, and they want the glitz and glamour that come with that International Auto Show. And this is something that we take for granted. We've had it for a number of years with the auto company, and we can't take it for granted. And this is, and not to get real technical, this is boiling down to a very simple part of math. Right now, the bonds for redoing Cobo Hall, the current bonds expire in 2015. If we extend that 7 years, we take care of this whole project. I mean, it boils down to being that simple. Let's extend the hotel and liquor tax for 7 years. If we do that, then we can bond. We've had the great work with Wallbridge, with John Rakolta, Ben Maybach, and others that have come through and said, okay, we can do this construction, and this is the amount that we can do it for. And to us, this makes all the sense in the world to do it. And some of it is starting to look very old. I was on a panel at the SAE show. And we were doing a panel, and I was with Doug Rothwell, and we're looking at the chandeliers. We were in one of the rooms, one of the side rooms, and it looked like they were from the 1950s. And unless those come back in vogue, they're remodeling, but it also goes to the things that are not as sexy. It goes to the docks. Right now, we take an extra month because the dock system is horrible. The reconstruction will not only put in a second set of docks, but re-engineer the current dock so that it's circular and the trucks don't have to wait for one to unload and then back out and the other one to pull in. It will be circular and there can be simultaneous movement of the trucks and the unloading. Things like that. The electrical system. Make it all wireless, too. All sorts of things that you need to do for the infrastructure for us to be competitive, because we're not competing against just New York, Chicago, and L.A. We're competing against the rest of the world. Tokyo, Beijing. They all want these new announcements and these product announcements and things like that. And we keep gaining. There's a number of Chinese automakers. The auto dealers are, I believe, got another one that which will make it five now that are going to be there this coming year. So it's something that, and the way to think of it, Jack, is what would WJR do to fight for its trademark? They would do everything possible to fight for it. What would Pepsi do? What would Coca-Cola do? They would fight for their trademark. This is our trademark, so we should be fighting for it. And it comes down to those simple 7 years. If we extend it, it works.
Next subject. On July 18th, a new thoroughbred racetrack opens just south of the airport, Pinnacle Racecourse. Jerry Campbell came to you last August and said, you know, I want to build a racetrack. And what you've done is unbelievable, helping make that happen. You've taken some hits for that. What will that racetrack do for that whole Aerotropolis?
It's a fantastic project. I mean, Jerry has had a reputation of can-do. I had met him originally because he sat on the Magna Entertainment Board. And Magna originally was looking at building a track out there. And so Jerry was a big advocate of it. In fact, he flew me, the governor, and another board member, Charlie Williams, up to meet with Mr. Stronach and to make sure we could lock in that Magna race course and some other things that we were trying to do. And once that deal wasn't able to continue on, he stepped forward and he said, I want to do this. And what's so important about it is it brings to focus the Aerotropolis. Now, the Aerotropolis is building up and turning Metro Airport and its sister airport, Will Run, into economic engines. You see, right now, the paradigm in the United States, most people look at the airports as strictly transportation facilities for people. You go to any other place in the world, and especially Europe and Hong Kong and Dubai and some of the others, those are economic engines that drive economies. In Schiphol, in Amsterdam, inside the fence, they call it inside the fence, that means everybody that's badged, there are 60,000 jobs tied to that airport. And what's so critical about the racetrack is that it pulls the infrastructure out there, meaning that the water, the sewer, the roads. And not only will, obviously it benefits the racetrack and you want it to happen, but it starts making or setting the plate for other businesses to come out there and start generating around the airport. And what's critical about that is that the economic models have now changed. And I'll just give you a quick example. It used to be in the past, let's say I supplied Ford or General Motors and I wanted to be a supplier. I would go and I would negotiate with them and say, okay, I want to supply you with this part. And they say, okay, they sign the agreement. Then you have 18 months. You go look and you build a facility or you find one. And then you generate and then you start supplying the part. The model isn't like that anymore. If I'm Ford or General Motors and you're a supplier and you say you want to supply me, one of the big three tells them, you know what, you got 9 months. I don't care where you build it or how you get it in. You got to get that part to me in 9 months and start integrating into my system. So what developers are doing now is they're looking and say, okay, what areas are developed and what areas do I start putting in facilities that are already ready to go? And so the racetrack becomes one of the catalysts because now that area is getting set up for other economic development to occur. And that's why it's so critical. Plus, it's been a remarkable, Jerry Campbell has been remarkable. He's made every commitment that he said he was going to do. He's a great partner. And believe me, this isn't just Wayne County. This is a public-private partnership because all we do is try to set the table. He has made the investments. Lisa, his wife, and who I understand is a real horse fanatic in the family, has really set this up so that it can be successful. If we had 20 Jerry Campbells, you'd probably see this area really sustain itself because once they make a commitment and they make it happen, there's a commitment and it follows through and you see the projects built on time and actually bring to fruition things that are necessary for this area.
I believe he's committed that within a couple of years he'll have 1,400 jobs created, direct and indirect, or he owes a lot of money.
Well, this is part of the whole new economic model we set up. We set it up on Pinnacle, which is owned by the county, and it's land. And people say, oh, well, you know, it's a private enterprise. Sell them the land. Well, it's to us, it's jobs. I mean, that's the bottom line as to if we're looking what's happening in this area. We've been bleeding jobs. And so it's set up on a sliding scale that they said ultimately if they bring in, I believe, 1,200 to 1,400 jobs, then I believe it gets the acres at $1 an acre or whatever. There's a sliding scale. If they don't bring in as many jobs, then the price tag on the property goes up. So to us, it's a win-win. The bottom line is people are want jobs. They want economic security. Our whole goal in Wayne County is that you don't have to get on a plane to see your children or your grandchildren. That should be our legacy, because that means that families stayed here. There were economic opportunities. You know, they believed in the education system, and they wanted to raise their kids here. So we don't want you to have to get on a plane to see your grandchildren.
We're talking to Bob Ficano, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the Wayne County Executive, Bob Ficano. Bob, when you travel to other countries, other continents, how do you sell Wayne County and Southeast Michigan?
Well, you know what? Sometimes I think we don't give ourselves enough credit. When I go to, like, the last trade mission to China, and I talk to government and business leaders, they know three cities, basically, from the United States. They know New York because of the financial institutions. They know L.A. because of the movies, usually, and Hollywood. But they know Detroit because of the history that they have put the world on wheels. And I get, one of the parts of flattery is that you know, everybody's trying to imitate us. And I'm not just talking about the manufacturing. I'm talking about the R&D, the supply chains, OEMs, and things like that that are set up. And they all want to do it. But, you know, we have tremendous assets, especially for foreign investments. Number one, we sit on an international border. You can reach 60% of the U.S. population overnight from this location. Plus, if you locate here, you have access to the Canadian market. We have a mature infrastructure and rail system. Part of what is important is that you be able to ship your product, and that infrastructure allows it to do it. Another one is the international airport, and people don't recognize this, but the reason why we're able to do areas such as Indianapolis and some other locations like that is that they don't have international flights. International companies want direct flights, and with the merger of Delta and Northwest Airlines, there's going to be even more international flights that are going out of this area. That attracts foreign investment because they want to be at a location. Our R&D, our university system. When I'm in Beijing, you know, they point to one great university and how great it is. When you look at it within, you know, the Tri-County area, you got Michigan State, you have University of Michigan, you have Wayne State, and plus all the community colleges and even colleges such as Oakland. And those are tremendous assets that we have. And the R&D that goes in on the vast majority of them is known worldwide. So those are ways that we sell it. And quite frankly, many of the countries and executives know about it.
This new terminal coming online, I'm hearing rumors that it's going to be the Robert Ficano Terminal.
No, I think at this point, everything's for sale, and probably including the name of the terminal at this point. So I don't think you're going to see that happen.
Well, I think Andy Appleby could make that happen for about $1 million. Huh? You can't take it with you. Bro.
Yeah.
We talk about the American dream. And I believe that the American dream is being experienced and lived every day in Wayne County by thousands of people. Give us a few examples.
You're absolutely right. We see it every day with successful, especially business people, that come over from other countries. They come here, they look at the opportunities, they usually are working very, very hard, and they've been able to establish themselves in their business. To do it. Anywhere from when we talk about the Middle East community, the Chaldean community, the Lebanese community, there are a lot of business people that have come over. They haven't had a lot of money, and they started business, and as I said, they worked very hard to do it. And you see it every day. In our economic development department, people come in and small business loans and things like that that we're able to arrange. They are willing to take those chances and to do it. And some of them grow at great rates in what they're able to do. So we have certain programs that help them. One is called Turbo that like eliminates your property tax when you build and things like that. So we use those economic tools, and we try to make, to us, we want you to be as successful as possible. So when you come over, no matter where you're coming from, if you want to invest in Wayne County, our phrase is we're going to invest in you.
Back on February 27th, you gave the State of the County Address for 2008. One of the things you said is the world's rapidly changing. we must change or fall behind. What do you say to a listener who says, I'm afraid to change? I'm just afraid. I don't want to change.
That's a natural reaction. But to me, we're right now at an opportunity that we can do dramatic things because the world is changing. Number one is because of our international airport. But number two is like China. There's a lot of people that are afraid of China. China isn't going to go away. If you've been there, you see that their national bird is the crane, the building crane, and as to what's going on. And what's going to – we can't make the same mistake, for example, that we did like with Japan. By that I mean when Toyota was first looking at investing in the United States, they were sort of shunned and things like that. They ended up – they've built 9 manufacturing plants. None of them have been in the state of Michigan. Corporations have the same mindset as immigrants that settled in this country. The reason why there's a little Italy in New York, the reason why there's Hamtramck here in Wayne County is that when the first wave of immigrants come over – at that particular time, they settle in, and then subsequent generations come where they are. Corporations have the same mindset. The Chinese are going to invest in the United States. We want them to plant their flag here in southeastern Michigan. We'd love to have it. In fact, we have over 30 Chinese companies now in Wayne County because generations that follow them will come where the original ones were, and you can then build on that investment.
Last question. What advice would Bob Fecano give to our young listeners tonight?
Jack, at least the advice that I would give them, and a couple things. One is your parents are the greatest sources of guidance that you can have because they've been there and they love you and they want to see you successful. But just as important is education. Education is the key to what's going to be successful for you in the future. It comes down to my own story with my own grandfather where he worked in the Rouge complex. One day I was waiting for him. He came home, and because of where he worked, his hands had turned a certain color. And I said, Grandpa, I want to do the same things you've always done. He said, there's nothing wrong with what I do. But he says, my hands are this color so that yours don't have to be. He says, I want you to go to college, and you promised me. At that point, he says, do you want to be a lawyer? I said, yes. So at that point, from that day on, I was a lawyer.
Bob Fecano, thanks for coming. Thanks for being a salesperson 7x24, month after month, year after year. We need it.
Thank you, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be the Honorable Judge Michael Warren of the Oakland County Circuit Court, the Bowtie Judge. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spock.